I'm happy to see you again. I'm happy because you are my friend. Tom, I haven't seen you for a long, long time. Happy to see you again.
In 3, 2, 1, cue announcer.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Locke.
Welcome to Serotalk. Podcast 40 for April 26, 2010. This is Michael Loft.
I'm Ricky Inger.
Ricky,
and I'm Mike Kelbo.
Mikey's not with us today, so maybe a little less banter and a little more product reviews. But anyway, he's hardworking. Lots of new innovations going on. Speaking of innovations, the two latest goodies we have introduced include IMAP support for email, and of course our addition of support of our content on the Bookport Plus. Ricky, would you like to talk about those two new cool features?
Sure, why not? The IMAP support is now available, and basically people have always had the ability to log in to samobile.net from a mobile device and read their email and so on when they were out on the road, but it wasn't quite the same experience as it would be to have either POP3 or IMAP support and be able to check your mail from using the native mail client on your mobile device, or even using Outlook or Windows Live Mail or something on another machine.
And we should maybe explain for those who don't know what IMAP is. It's a very cool protocol that allows the ability to check your one account from multiple machines without worrying about deleting messages you didn't mean to. When you use the default, the POP or post office protocol, you could say leave messages on server, but when you download them, it may not honor that request and you might lose them, and they're only on the one computer that you downloaded. Whereas IMAP lets you say leave them on the server, and you could have a computer at home, a computer at work, and maybe even a netbook or laptop or something, and have all three computers interface with that account and delete a message from any one of those and have it delete from the others.
Or move it to a custom folder. You want all your recipes in a recipes folder, you can move an email over to there, and it will honor that request across any machine or device that you check email from.
So kind of like the concept of Dropbox, even though most people aren't using it that way, it was designed to synchronize your computers. So think of IMAP as a way to synchronize your email between all of your computers so that you have the same messages in the same folders on all machines. So we're very excited to offer that feature. Use it with your email client of choice. And of course, as always, it's always an addition. So if you'd rather still go to samobile.net, you're certainly welcome to do so. Or of course, pull down your email through the SA Mobile desktop.
Support for the Bookport Plus, and it's just like the support for things like the BookSense and the Victor Reader Stream, where you can transfer any content that you like over to the Bookport, so you can have your movies, and you can even have your email and forum messages and news and all that fun stuff.
This Thursday, the 29th, is International Guide Dog Day, and it's a way to explain that owners have the rights to bring their guide dogs into public establishments, restaurants, and taxi cabs, and other public facilities. So we're going to do a Tech Chat number 60. This is our, hey, never thought about it. If this is podcast 40.
This is our
40,
week of 20s.
And, right, well, more than that. If it's 40 plus Tech Chat is number 60, that's 100 presentations.
100 presentations.
We should celebrate that somehow.
We should. I want cake, but
I want $100.
That would be good.
And speaking of $100, there was a post from Melanie Brunson, executive director for ACB, the American Council of the Blind, talking about the forthcoming $100 bill. So basically, a new $100 bill is coming out to the masses in February of next year. And there are some concerns because, first of all, it is not covered by the recent court ruling that was issued that has to make the money accessible. So two things there we're concerned about. A, of course, there's those of us who purchase the iBill that are going to find that this is probably not going to read, but fortunately not many people have $100 bills. But if you do come into one, it does happen. It has some special markings on it that may be helpful to some folks.
You mean they'll be tactile, perhaps?
Well, we're hoping they will be. There is a what's called secure ribbon that is made up of ground-up glass. The hope is that there may be a place of the bill that feels different where this secure ribbon is placed. Also, there are larger numerals, so those who are partially sighted may be able to pick up on that.
Someone could send us one for testing. I'd be okay with that.
Speaking of testing, we had some recent testing and the official launch yesterday, the 25th, of Mushroom FM. And it took me a little while to understand why they chose that name. I was like, why would you call your station Mushroom FM?
But the concept, the fun guys, aren't they?
Yeah, the station with fun guys. It was a spinoff. Many people left the legend, the station from Bill Sparks, and decided they wanted to do their own station and not necessarily care if they were 24/7, but anytime that they're on the air, that it be with a live presenter and be able to play other musical formats than oldies and other periods of time. Instead of just being limited to the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So anyway, they launched, and I'll be curious to see what this group of broadcasters will come up with. Of course, it's headed by Jonathan Mosen and Brian Hartchen. Of course, it is available in Samnet and on the iPhone. In
yes.
iBlink Radio, and Steve Wuber has also added it to OoTunes. So you can check that out. It's over at mushroomfm.com. But I guess the name Mushroom as in to grow and develop and to get larger and better.
Not necessarily. We won't necessarily be seeing Mescaline FM as a follow-up to that. Some people were wondering just what sort of reference that was. But no, they're the fun guys. There certainly is no shortage of great internet radio, and it's interesting to me that there are so many different blindness-owned and operated internet stations. I mean, there's a huge variety of them. So for those of you who are fans of internet radio, you're probably not going to run out of material to choose from anytime soon.
Well, the two interesting things are, A, if you've always wanted to do a show and be a part of a radio station, there's so many radio stations to choose from, so you can certainly find one. Some stations, you just may not agree with their philosophy, or they may not feel that you as a broadcaster are appropriate for what they're trying to do. Musical chairs, I've seen. We had some people who recently left Innovations, and a few of those went to Bill Sparks, the legend, and others left Bill. So a lot of people kind of make the rounds and go from one station to another. It is a challenge, you know, when you're volunteering, you don't get a burnout factor or you get personality conflicts. I mean, I know as a broadcaster that to do something like that and put yourself out in the public, you may have a little bit of an ego, and that's not always a bad thing. I call it confidence. So anyway, we wish them well, and more power to you. The more blind broadcasters and blind podcasts out there, the better off we are as a community. Speaking of podcasts, I found another one that's been out for a while because they're already up to episode 51. This is the Disability Law Lowdown podcast, and the most recent one talked about some changes due to the new health reform legislation that has passed. And of course, that's a very controversial topic, but this one, perhaps I'm guessing maybe a little biased because I didn't really hear anything negative, but did outline some of the positive things as far as rights for consumers and the ability to get coverage and not be denied because of a previous illness. So there's some things going into effect right away, a few things 6 months down the road, and some things as late as 2014, but I think it's a very interesting podcast. Again, you can get it at iBlink Radio or Samnet, or of course, grab the link to the website from serotalk.com. Two things on the Twitter front. First, on Facebook, they dropped the Facebook Lite, which some people are upset about. I never really used it, so I don't care too much. I used m.facebook.com, but obviously anytime you take away something, there's always going to be people who are upset about it.
Yeah, people are incensed. Yeah. Because I think Facebook Lite actually offered a couple of things that the mobile site did not offer, and I don't know what those things are, but now you only have the two choices, the very stripped down mobile version or the ever-changing and usually annoying, at least to me, main Facebook site where you're navigating through a lot of information to find what you want, and the layout changes frequently.
Their new API, and that's going to allow a lot of new interfaces to Facebook, including messaging, I think even now with Miranda.
The AIM client also offers Facebook chat. I don't know if you can update your Facebook status, but you can at the very least participate in Facebook chat from the AOL Instant Messenger client.
Right. So these are growing pains. I mean, new people brought on in the last year trying to modernize Facebook. And of course, anytime you do that, things are fixed, things are broken, and they're fixed again and broken again. So hopefully it's a transition period, but ultimately we will have better access. But two exciting things, or at least one very exciting thing, and in terms of Twitter is that Google developing the Twitter timeline, which is going to be great because, you know, searching within Twitter is only minimally effective, but this interface from Google, you'll be able to search period of time or follow specific topics that you're interested in and find out all the posts relevant to that. And I think that's something, since I use Twitter for news, those of you who use it in that way might find this a very handy tool.
Yeah, you can look at, well, a timeline, so you can see what topics were trending on a particular day, as well as follow a topic over a period of time and see what was being said during that period.
The Library of Congress has announced that they're going to archive every tweet ever sent, all the way back from the beginning, the first launch date of Twitter.com. So just a reminder to us that those are public.
And whatever you post online is not going to go away. It's not like send it and forget it. It could very well come back to haunt you.
Exactly, especially if you're looking for employment or something, because if that's searchable and you can go in there and I want to find out everything Ricky Inger ever wrote so I can see if she's going to be a good employee for my company. That could come back and bite you. So something to give thought to. Robert Carter and Jenny Axler produced their second podcast. We mentioned 2 weeks ago about the dr-carter.com. This one is very interesting because the title is Does Size Matter? iPad versus iPod. Jenny showed how the iPad is really the first device that allows the blind to see a web page in the same way that sighted folks do. You know, if it's in three columns, that we get to see that.
This is really exciting to me. I think I've probably said it more times than I can count, but I really love the spatial aspects of working with a touchscreen on the iPhone. Things are always located in the same place, and I can get sort of an idea of what a web page might look like, but the iPhone itself is very small, so you don't often see an entire page as it's really laid out. And with the iPad, you apparently can do that. So whenever someone says, look at the sidebar where I have posted the following things, you're now no longer saying, okay, how would my screen reader render that? And where would the sidebar be located for me? Would I page down three times or whatever? You'll be able to locate that just based on the description that was given to you by someone.
As I told you, Ricky, I opted to get one of the new MacBook Pros, which came out, because I wanted a really powerful laptop, especially when traveling, to be able to convert those audio recordings and get them in place. And I really just wanted something portable and fast, so I went that route. And, of course, that has the trackpad, so you can actually flick around. And that was kind of cool, like with iTunes, to keep tapping next, the same way that I do, you know, with the iPhone. But not quite the same as far as getting that feel for the screen and where things are laid out. And I guess we just don't do a show without talking about some Apple stuff. But a prototype was leaked of the iPhone. The forthcoming, I guess we'll call it 4.0, should be out sometime this summer. They have shrunk the screen size from 3.5 to 2.8 inches, all the while making the board about one-third of its original size, meaning there's 19% more room for the battery to be deployed on it. So what is that going to mean for us? Will that be eaten up by the multitasking, or will we truly have some better support? Because I think a lot of the issues have to do more with software and getting that fixed. But a forward-facing camera, flash, yep, which is going to be great for those of us trying to scan and do OCR, optical character recognition.
Not to be confused with Adobe Flash, which I don't see coming to the iPhone pretty much ever, but a flash on the camera. And that will indeed be nice for doing OCR. There are a few apps for that currently, but you have to have really good lighting, so this may address some of that.
And even though the screen is smaller, it has a 960 by 640 high resolution pixel display, so hopefully to those who can see, it will be even more pronounced and work better than it has in the past. Also, a secondary microphone for noise cancellation, so that might be kind of cool. We'll have to see how that works in the real world. The back is completely flat and made out of a material that's either glass or plastic with the purpose of improving reception. That is, I think you would agree, one of the biggest weaknesses of the iPhone is its ability to maintain calls, oftentimes lost when you're moving, even around your home or turning your head a little bit.
I've never really had the issue of dropped calls, but perhaps it depends on the area that you're in, but that's certainly been one of the biggest complaints about the iPhone since the very first model was released. And it should be interesting to see how well this works, although it has been stated that this change in design makes the phone not look quite as attractive as it did before.
It's hard to say without having the phone in your hand, but I'm thinking a flat design might prevent you from dropping the device. As you know, if your hand is slightly moist, if there's any perspiration on your hand, it would be easy to drop the iPhone. I know many people who have, with dire consequences as it landed on the pavement. I'm wondering if that might reduce the odds of that and maybe part of their decision. But, I mean, the whole thing was very interesting because an Apple employee left the unit in a bar. Someone found it and basically sold it
to the media company
for Gizmodo and for $5,000. And so they showed the device and returned it to Apple upon their request, which I'm sure came from attorneys. The skeptics in us thought, well, was this a planned publicity move and something we'll never know? Although I did read now there is a police investigation taking place.
Yes, there is. So this has been quite the saga. There's a police investigation going on because it's unclear as to whether people acted legally in that this was lost or stolen property and it was then sold to Gizmodo. The whole saga is being investigated by law enforcement.
Two products that I use are teaming up. And who's to say which is the best security suite? That's a personal opinion. And it's kind of like screen readers. They go back and forth on who's the lead at doing what. But Viper, pronounced by many as Viper, but I promise you it is Viper, V-I-P-R-E, Sunbelt Software, they're teaming up with Malwarebytes. And they've actually set up a website where you can go get a security scan at viper.malwarebytes.org. So that may be something if you're working on someone's machine or even your own machine, you don't have security installed just yet, you can go there and find out if you have any malware or viruses or any problems on your machine.
Great products to team up. I don't know if I'm glad or relieved that they didn't call it Viper Bytes.
Right after our last podcast, we found out about the passing of Torsten Brandt, who did a number of things, and most people know him for his work with the creation of Tox. The front man there doing all the marketing and sales for Tox, the first mobile screen, accessible screen reading solution for PDAs was made available in Europe in 2000. And of course, Mike Cowell reviewed the first option for those of us in the U.S., that being the Nokia 9290, and that aired on ACB Radio main menu in December of 2002, and we have that actually up on the serotalk.com blog. So if you'd like to hear kind of how it all began 8 years ago, you can certainly go to serotalk.com and read my limited interaction with Torsten Brandt. I had a lot of respect for him. He did not at any point criticize his competition. He truly used his products, was a true advocate of accessibility for the blind. They have Book of Condolence. I'm not familiar with. I guess it's pretty common, though, where you can kind of post your comments to the family of a deceased person, and one has been set up for Torsten, and you can get the link for that at serotalk.com. So if you are a user of the Symbian phones or even his efforts
even
for accessibility back in the 90s, even if you're not, to show your support to his wife. And of course, you can also make a PayPal donation if you wish to help out the family as they deal with this. Feeling that we were a little bit hard on Tox, which is kind of understandable because it is really impossible at an exhibit to just pick up any piece of technology and master it. Many people are very happy with the touch screens. You know, Nokia N97 on Tox 5, and here is a well-written email with an alternate view on the subject.
Hi everyone, it's Sarah Talk Tech. Very kind of you to mention my website a couple of times in various podcasts. Where do I send the royalty checks? I enjoy the casts very much, and have to say it has become one of my favorite sources of information, and keeping up with a variety of technologies. I wanted to share my own perspective on your comments about Tox 5, as most of what you said was citing what others had said. Firstly, I would encourage you to grab a 5th edition device, and try it out for yourself.
While an iPhone may have reasonably good accessibility out of the box, it can't compare with the features and power of a professionally designed screen reader. I'll never forget when I first got an accessible phone for the first time a couple of years ago. It was like a whole new world had opened up. I think it was as momentous for me as when internet first became widespread. All of a sudden, I could do all those things that sighted people had done on phones for years. And using Tox 3.5 at that time was so intuitive that one could start using it right away without any training and at least work out basic functionality on their own.
And without even referencing the manual, though you are wise to do so, especially to save time and frustration with things like web browsing. I think the implementation of talks on touchscreen devices has been very well done, especially on the home screen and navigation in general. Users can in fact use the device like a sighted person would, exploring the screen with their finger, and having icons widgets announced when they come across one, and also receiving vibration feedback at the same time.
Mike Calvo seemed to be contrasting his iPhone to talks and saying that he can just move his finger around the screen until he comes to what he wants, and then double tap. I guess the difference is that on a Nokia touchscreen, you do the same thing, but only have to single tap when you get to what you want. So it's actually easier, not harder, as his comments inferred. Any perceived greater degree of difficulty in general with using talks on the touchscreen, I believe, has to do with the greater degree for blind and visually impaired people using touch devices in general. I don't believe it could have been implemented any simpler than it was. Contrast talks to Code Factory's Mobile Speak 4.0 on touchscreens, where they actually break the screen down into four separate quadrants, and don't have many soft keys accessible at all.
Whereas with talks, a user who hasn't used a touchscreen before should be able to, in most cases, play around with the phone for an hour and will have learned the main functions. Better yet, talks training mode will show user on any screen they are on what keys do what. So if on the home screen and you activate training mode, then start pressing buttons, it will announce what each key press actually does. Do it in the web browser and it tells you the browser specific actions for those keys and so on. Besides being able to use the phone like a sighted person would, and not having to completely change the E, which I can tell you from personal experience makes it much easier for a sighted person to pick up my phone, such as my wife, and still be able to use it, there is enough added functionality and power in the new version to satisfy the geeks.
The home screen has fast access to the most commonly changed talks options such as speech rate and volume, repeat last phrase, change cursor mode, and much more. Further, they have implemented a very innovative means of using the phone with one hand, which I challenge any iPhone user to duplicate. Many sighted users are jealous of the ability to operate the device purely by use of the volume up and volume down on the side of the phone, with the ability to scroll, select, and even change tab sheets in an application, all without having to open the QWERTY keyboard or touch the screen. The one area I wish talks had chosen a different implementation was in the web browser. They chose to use a virtual keyboard similar to the one used on the home screen to change common options. But rather than the home screen, where you have to press the talks key to activate the virtual keyboard, in the web browser, it exists all the time, which does make it easy to press next heading or next link too easily, when perhaps all you want to do is scroll down the page.
In any case, I'm not having a go at you guys, but just wanted to give a more full description from first-hand knowledge of what the new talks is like for 5th edition Symbian devices. I think of iPhones vs Symbian devices as the classic mentality of Mac vs PC. If you just want something to work and don't like to tinker, go with the iPhone. If you require the full power of something very configurable, sometimes to your own detriment, get a Symbian with talks. For instance, if you have your speech rate turned up as high as it will go and miss something on the iPhone, how do you get it to repeat what it just said? Can you navigate an email as read all, or decide to change it to line by line, word by word, character by character, or even spell something and at a different rate than you have regular speech set to?
Can you tell the screen reader not to speak soft keys you're very familiar with, or tell it how to label things that aren't spoken? Can you tell it how you want it to read numbers to you, or whether to speak uppercase, or whether to announce caller ID, or, when you're browsing the web, can you press a hotkey to get to the next link, the next non-link, next heading, next text box, or top end of page? See what I mean? Some users may not require all that functionality, but for the amount of web work I do on my phone, I don't think I could get by on the built-in TTS on Apple's devices. I think I would be bored inside of a month.
Also, for anyone's interest, the hardware sophistication of the iPhone is roughly similar to Nokia phones from 4 to 5 years ago in terms of how complex the apps are that it can run. Symbian, for its lack of built-in accessibility and less than spectacular marketing hype, is still clearly superior hardware and software-wise, even if they are lacking on multi-tap user interfaces.
If I can turn the tables on myself and take the opposite point of view for a moment, though, I am concerned over Nokia's, and now that Symbian has gone open source, Symbian's apparent lack of interest in creating an accessibility standard in their devices. For companies like Nuance and Code Factory who want their software to work on a variety of devices running the same OS, the majority of their time is spent creating device-specific fixes to get the app to run similarly from one handset to another.
Nokia never bothered to address this, and Marcus Grober from Nuance, despite best efforts, seems to be having a similarly tough time getting Symbian to care about this. This is very concerning for the long-term viability of Symbian in the blind and visually impaired community, and with exciting devices coming out from Apple and Google, and having some level of accessibility built in, much more so on Apple than Google at present, which has some big holes in theirs, I fear that Symbian will not always be the dominant OS of choice for the blindness market. Unless they lift their game. Lastly, just to comment on the N97 in general. I love it to pieces, and it's a great successor to my N950HEB. It feels good in the hand, the QWERTY keyboard is well spaced, the battery life is great. Unfortunately, the firmware is still a little buggy from time to time, and the amount of system memory is insufficient for such a powerful device. But knowing what I know now about it, I would have still bought one without a doubt, even more so, now that TOX 5 is happily running on it. One small change I would have made, if I'd been the designer of it, though with the QWERTY keyboard open, which is how I use the device 95% of the time.
It has a directional joypad on the keyboard, but no physical key 1, key 2, so there is no choice but to use the touchscreen. I just think it would have been faster to have two small physical keys under the joypad as an alternative. But maybe I'm just being picky. Okay, I'm putting the soapbox away now, I promise. Thanks again for your informative materials, and if you've made it this far in my email, you get a gold star. Take care, guys, and hey, let me know when that Ricky TTS voice is available, so I can break up with Karen on my N97.
Best regards, Ted, email admin blindmindnet, http, www.blindmindnet, technology news, reviews, interviews and advocacy.
We hope to see your emails with you giving us your 2 cents at resources@serotalk.com. You can call the Blab line at 866-997-BLAB.
Coming up with No Mikey, we got a little more time for reviews, and we had some requests to go back and really explain the XP mode, which gives you the option to run Windows XP underneath Windows 7. Join us Thursday, the 29th, for our tech chat on Guide Dogs. So if you've been thinking about one, would like to share your advocacy efforts, if you've ever been denied access, maybe if you've attended 2 or more schools, we'd like to hear from you. Maybe you've trained your own animal. We'd like to hear from you as well. I didn't know that was done. Or if you're using a guide dog in conjunction with, or were trained at a school on using your guide dog in conjunction with GPS, we'd like to hear from you. We think those would be some very interesting topics. Also coming up on May 6th, it's iPad 101. We're going to get some users who finally received their 3G models to talk about how it compares with the iPod Touch or iPhone, what they like about it. Was it worth the money to them? Later on the 27th of May, right before the official release to the masses, we will give you our 2 cents on Office 2010. So anyway, that's coming out in a month. So if you're thinking about buying 07, you might just hold off because 2010 is right around the corner. All that and more coming up on Serotalk Podcast 40. What do users of Samnet enjoy most?
The movies.
Movies.
The radio.
Well, that too, and I like the fact that we can use Pop and IMAP for our email, and my new discovery is the fact that you can make CDs, and it's very accessible and easy to do.
Old radio shows.
We Media like Lab is very, very accessible, simple.
Yeah. I like my document scan.
I love everything about System Access. Very affordable.
Shows us inaccessible internet.
Yes, I love that.
And the socializer is a neat thing.
Also, the flexibility of the price, so reasonable.
And you know what I love more than anything about System Access?
What's that?
That's where I met my sweetie.
Aww.
Meet interesting people, learn cool stuff, and maybe even meet that special someone. Begin your free 7-day trial today of the System Access screen reader, voice chat, and all the cool things on Samnet. www.satogo.com. Hi, this is Mike Wolof, and I want to show you today a new service offered by Microsoft. It's called XP Mode. What it is the ability to run a copy of Windows XP underneath your professional or ultimate version of Windows 7. Now, that's important what I just said, professional or ultimate, because most people, when they go out and buy these versions, oftentimes they will get what's called the home version. And the home version does not support this. Now, at first I thought, well, how cool, Microsoft's giving this away, the ability to run XP underneath your Windows 7. Now I realize it's a nice little incentive for you to upgrade, maybe spend $70 to as much as $185 to upgrade to Pro or Ultimate versions. So as the song says, nothing comes for free. But if you already have Pro or Ultimate or decide that the service is worth it for you, then certainly you can take advantage of it. Now, I will go real quickly and show you where to get it. We're not going to go through the install process on here because it has already been installed, but I will tell you what you need and give you a few caveats, things to keep in mind to save you time as you deploy a copy of Windows XP under 7. Why would we want to do this? Mainly because there are a few things that work under XP but do not work under Windows 7. These would include maybe particular pieces of hardware like certain printers or scanners, particular sound devices that while they might work under 7, they might actually work better underneath Windows XP. One good example is SoundForge 8. Maybe you're used to using that particular version and you like it better under XP. It's cool to have for that reason, but I would not, and I repeat, I would not upgrade from Windows XP to Windows 7 with the intention of always running Windows XP. If you want to stay in XP all the time, then stay in native Windows XP. This is something you have for the convenience of when you need to run applications in XP, but it's not something that I think you should live in. One of the biggest reasons has to do with this copy of XP is what is known as a virtual machine. And the one big downside to virtual machines, everything pretty much works as normal, but for those of us using screen readers, the one downside is they use what's called a generic sound card or sound driver. It might be known as something like PC16 or something like that, implying it comes from Creative Labs, but whatever the source, it is not your true native sound card. So your speech could be choppy. Usually playing things is okay, just browsing the web and listening to Winamp or Samnet, the media player, no problem at all. But if you find you want to start recording and doing other things, you are going to find the speech could be choppy. The first time I ran Skype, it actually crashed. It seems to work after that point. It is not for the faint at heart. It generally works, and we'll show you how to increase your RAM, but if you're going to do it, you may want to have a dedicated sound device for XP that is separate from Windows 7 instead of allowing it to share and use the Windows 7 sound card simultaneously. I mean, that concept is cool, the fact that you can go between XP and Windows 7 with one sound card, but if you're seriously wanting to do something with sound under XP like record or edit, then you're going to want a dedicated sound card. Where do we go to get this XP mode for our Windows 7 Professional or Ultimate versions? We actually go to
Start menu, search programs and files, search box, editable text, when
www.microsoft.com/windows/virtual-pc. Now we can quit there and click on a link on that page, or we can go ahead and add the slash download.
.aspx.
And of course, as always,
run the following add-on, Windows Activation Technologies from Microsoft Corporation. If you trust the website and the add-on and want to allow it to run, click here. Press alt.
So right there, it is asking us to run this Windows Genuine Advantage add-on. It wants to make sure that your copy of Windows 7 is valid, legitimate, not pirated. And unfortunately, you have to do this before you can proceed. I know of no way around it because they're giving you, in their mind, they're giving you Windows XP, and this is kind of required now for any of their stuff, be it Office, even Windows Media Player technologies.
Select your edition of Windows 7 and desired language for installation. Drop-down list.
We now choose our copy of Windows 7. So here we choose the drop down, of course, in System Access and many screen readers with the alt down arrow.
Select system, starter 32-bit.
So you have home starter 32-bit, does not qualify.
Home premium 32-bit.
Home premium 32-bit. I think that's a little confusing, a name like home and premium in one sentence.
Home premium 64-bit.
And the home premium 64-bit. Those will not work. If that's what you have and you tab to the next button, it will come back and tell you that it does not qualify for XP mode and give you a chance to upgrade to that version.
Professional 32-bit.
Now,
5 of 10.
The rest of these will work. Professional 32.
Professional 64-bit. 6 of 10.
Professional 64-bit.
Enterprise 32-bit. 7 of 10.
Enterprise 32-bit.
Enterprise 64-bit. 8 of 10.
Enterprise 64-bit.
Ultimate 32-bit.
And Ultimate 32-bit. And,
ultimate
of course,
64-bit.
Ultimate 64-bit. That's what I'm running, so we will choose that. But again, any but the very top options will work for you.
Drop-down list. Select language. Ultimate 64-bit.
It's asking for the language.
Select language. English. 2 of 43.
So we will press alt-down arrow. Down arrow once, and you hear English.
Drop-down list. Windows XP mode. Link.
And now we are ready to proceed to the Windows XP mode. So we have three files that we need to get. The first is the actual Windows installer. It comes in at a whopping 500 megabytes. Then there are two additional files we will need that will be based on whether we've chosen 32 or 64-bit. Each is somewhere in the area of about 10 megabytes. You will need to get all three files and install them in the order that you download them. 1, 2, 3. Good thing is, it will let you know if you try to install them out of order. It'll just tell you that it can't proceed. So make sure when you get them that you're paying attention to where you're saving them to and what the file names are. Or if you're like me, a true geek, rename them to something that makes sense to you. Get the three files you need, and then we can close out and leave this website. We're really not done yet, because there's definitely at least one other thing that we need. You will want to get a copy of Internet Explorer 8.0. The reason is, Microsoft, in their infinite wisdom, they give you a copy of XP, complete with Service Pack 3. But however, even when they tell you that IE6 is bad and unsecure and compromises your computer, when you run XP mode, what do you get? You get IE6. First of all, it's not going to work with System Access. I mean, you can browse pages, but what you cannot do is upgrade your voices. And really, it is just a very non-secure way to browse the web. So you will want to, and I would recommend getting it in advance just to save you time. But either way, one way or another, before you proceed, one of the first things you do once we get XP up and running is to install Internet Explorer 8, also known as IE8. Two other things to keep in mind is that once you want to begin downloading the files, for some reason it takes quite a while for them to begin. We don't know why this is, but one thing I've found that helps is to go into your pop-up blocker and add, of all things, the website www.microsoft.com. You would think Microsoft would have excluded their own website, but maybe that was to keep the antitrust folks off their back. Add that to your pop-up blocker. That will be very helpful. So, we get the three files. We got to install them, of course, starting with the largest, the actual XP. It's about 500 megabyte. Once it's installed, your system will need to reboot. Then you install the other two files, and one of them, I don't remember which, will prompt you to boot again. So you're going to end up rebooting twice before we get ready to start the party. Now, once that's done, and you have all three files installed, we can press the Start button.
Start menu, search programs and files, search box, editable text.
Land. Now, many people don't know Windows 7 works the opposite. They try to down arrow, and you usually don't get anything unless you've added some shortcuts. But the way the Explorer under Windows 7 works is that you up arrow,
all programs, submenu,
and you go into your programs.
WordPad. Firefox control panel, Windows speech recognition, tune up, Windows virtual PC submenu, W.
The Windows virtual PC submenu. We will right arrow to expand that.
Windows XP mode.
And we have what's called Windows XP mode. The first time you run this, when you press enter on this, it will go through and actually install it. It happens pretty quickly, actually. Just slightly over 5 minutes on my 64-bit machine. Of course, my laptop that runs a bit slower, maybe 10 to 15 minutes, but as compared with normally installing Windows, it actually went relatively quickly. Okay, so we can either browse to the shortcut to start up Windows XP. Since I've already made a shortcut, when I right-click, I don't have the option to do it again, but you can start it from here or create a shortcut on your desktop, which I have done, then going to the desktop, and while on the shortcut, pressing F2 and renaming to XP.
Manage virtual machines. M.
We also have the manage virtual machines in here.
Menu open. Open. O. Taskbar virtual machines. List. Windows XP mode VMCX. Date modified. 4/26/2010/6:07 p.m. Not selected. 1-1. Windows XP mode VMCX. Machine status. Power down. Memory. 3072 MB. Primary disk. C. /users/local/app/local/microsoft/windows/virtual-pc/virtual-machines/windows-xp-mode. Machine status. Power down. Menu open. Open. O. Settings. E. Menu closed.
Now with the machine highlighted, we
menu
will
open. Settings. E.
Go into the settings.
Menu closed. Windows XP mode. Windows virtual PC settings. List. Name. Current value. Windows XP mode. Memory. Current value. 3072 MB.
By default, the memory is actually 512 megabytes.
Memory RAM. Editable text. 3072.
Tab once, you will end in the field where you want to change the RAM from 512 to whatever you have to spare. You will probably want to choose about half of the available RAM of your Windows 7 machine. If you have 2 gig of RAM, you'll want to change this value from 512 to half of 2048, which is 1024. If you have 4 gig, you'll want to change this value to something like 2048. I have 8 gig, but I chose 3072, or 3 gigs. So 1 gig is considered as 1024. So this is where you set this. A lot of people don't know where this setting is. Now, if we shift tab back.
This is the name of the virtual machine in your virtual machine's folder. This name does not affect the computer name. Virtual machine name. List. Memory. Current value. 3072 MB. Name. Current value. Windows XP. Memory. Current value. Hard disk 1. Current value. Windows XP mode VHD. 3 of 15.
So as you down arrow, these are where all the settings are.
Hard disk 2, current value, none. Hard disk 3, current value, none. Undo disks, current value, disabled. DVD drive, current value, none. COM1, current value, none. COM2, current value, none.
And you could go through and make all the changes, and you'll want to go to the Microsoft.com/Windows/Virtual-PC and download a few different PDFs or do a Google search for more information in fine-tuning XP mode. But I did want to show you how you can tab over into the RAM field, because that one did take me a little while to find on my own. So with that done, I'm going to go to the desktop and click on the shortcut that I've created that I called XP. So all I have to do is press the letter X.
XP size 1.48 KB.
There you go. And it's a shortcut, so I press Enter, and you will hear it.
Windows XP mode, Windows Virtual PC, starting the virtual machine, starting the virtual machine, 0%.
It'll read percentages up to about 3%. 18 or 19%, but at that point it will start 6%. Up Windows XP, and we can show you a few other things here.
8%.
Again, we would recommend a specific sound device.
11%.
We'll show you how to add USB support, how to quickly get back to Windows 7.
14%.
How to enable or disable various devices.
17%.
And I'm also going to try, which I've never done before, I'm going to add a USB sound card.
20%.
And see if we can change it so that XP has its own sound
card. Windows, password field, Windows XP mode, LAN.
So now we are on the password field, which you are required to enter when you set it up.
System access is ready.
And there we go. We are in Windows XP underneath Windows 7. And again, the first thing you're going to want to do is get a copy of Internet Explorer 8.0 and get that installed. I've already played with this a few hours, so we have a number of icons on the desktop.
Desktop, list, docs.
You may hear kind of some thumping sounds.
Recycle bin, internet, 2 SoundForge, 5 Studio, access, browser, F-sharp, FTP.
That may have to do with the sound card that you're sharing. I am currently sharing a Samson G-Track. It's a combination microphone sound card. But we can dedicate a sound card under XP.
Winamp.
Or, of course, live with it. I'm going to click on Winamp, and we will actually play you some music.
The bartender say, she ain't pretty, she just looks that way.
There you go. That's Winamp underneath. Of course, we can run System Access as well.
Please wait.
And you can pretty much do anything that you would normally do under XP underneath Windows 7. And you'll hear I have email.
Desktop list. You have one new message. 1 of 13.
So all of the features are there.
SA Mobile Network Home Socializer.
We can go into the Socializer and do everything that we did before. So what can I say?
SA Mobile Desktop. SA Mobile Network. Are you sure you want the discount? 1. Northern Pikes. She ain't pretty. Samnet Radio.
Well, as you heard there, the speech was a little glitchy. Let's show you how you navigate between Windows XP and Windows 7. The hotkey you want to use is Control, Alt, and either the left or right arrow. Either one works.
Toolbar. Always show the toolbar. Checkbox. Check.
That's the toolbar. It says always show the toolbar. I don't think you want to uncheck that. And then you can left and right arrow. If you tab.
Toolbar. Switch to your computer desktop button.
Switch to your computer desktop. So, again, to quickly get to Windows 7, we hit Control, press Control, left arrow, tab once, press space bar.
Start button.
Voila, you are
desktop, list, XP,
in Windows 7. Now, we could have left Winamp playing, so you can do some things between both operating systems. Keep in mind, your keyboard can only be focused in one or the other. But you could, for example, maybe play music from the XP side, maybe have a conversation going over there in Skype. I'm not sure. That's something you'll have to get in and play around with and see what things can be done in both operating systems simultaneously. But while we use the Control, Alt, and left and right arrow to get to that toolbar, we simply Alt-Tab to get back into Windows XP and listen to what it calls it.
Windows XP mode, Windows Virtual PC, LAN, Input Capture Window, Output Painter Child Window.
Input Capture Window, Output Painter Child Window. Well, who knows why they call it that, but it works.
Desktop, list, mobile.
And I guess that's what matters at the end of the day. Before we show you some of the other options on the toolbar, let's go ahead and I will unwrap one of these very cheap, or shall I say economical, sound cards that you can get for as low as $7.99 a piece from Merit.com. We learned about this from BlindBargains.com, where they had these on sale for $4 a piece. I bought a few of them. It is a very economical sound card, simply wrapped in a little cigarette wrapper, I guess, a little cellophane. And the reason I like these, not because they're cheap, but because they have three buttons on them for volume up, volume down, and a mute button at the top. Now, the mute button is a little recessed, and if you're not careful, it can actually get lodged in there. These are very cheaply made, I don't necessarily recommend these unless you're going to be working on people's computers or if you travel and want a secondary sound card. So you really don't lose any sleep if it gets lost or gets bent, which these, trust me, will do. I've already destroyed one. So at $4 a pop, I wasn't losing sleep over it. But what I want to do here is connect it so that I can have a separate sound card for Windows XP versus Windows 7. Let's see what happens when we do it. I should now plug it in. And of course, you heard instant recognition. But while I'm told it can be designed to have this come up under XP, by default, without making the changes, it's going to be under Windows 7. But I want it under XP. So I'm going to press Control Alt and the left arrow.
Toolbar. Always show the toolbar. Checkbox. Checked.
And I'm going to right arrow.
Action button.
Here's the action button. What happens if we press spacebar?
Menu open. Restart. R closed. Restart. R. Menu closed.
We have restart and close. But we're going to tell you in just a minute how to properly shut down Windows XP because it's important to do a proper shutdown.
USB button.
If I right arrow again, I get the USB button.
Menu open. USB audio codec. Attach. New.
So there's the spacebar with the USB audio codec and it says attach.
USB gear microphone. Attach. New.
And the USB gear microphone. Well, the USB, I happen to know that the USB audio codec is what is sitting on Windows 7, and this gear microphone, the cheap $4 card, is under XP. So that's what I want to attach so that it takes it from Windows 7 and affixes it to my copy of Windows XP.
Menu closed.
And you heard it disconnect from 7, and soon you will hear it attach to Windows XP.
Windows XP mode, Windows Virtual PC, LAN, input capture window, output paper, shutter window, USB ear microphone,
there.
New hardware, USB composite device, found new hardware, USB ear microphone.
Now, if you lose speech, what you want to do is shut down your screen reader, in this case, System Access, with inserts F4. Now I will restart it with Control-Alt-S, and it should be on the new sound device that I've installed. Because this card comes on at a low volume, we also need to turn it up. So I'm pressing the button to turn it up, 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 up. And now let's see what we have. Now that XP has taken control of the card, we have speech on the new device.
System Access is ready.
Now, System Access. Now let's see if Winamp switched to the new card or is using the old one.
Winamp. Main window.
Which card did Winamp go to by default? Normally, it tries to use what it calls the primary sound card, so it should have switched to the new dedicated XP USB device. Actually, in this case, it did not. But if you know how to use Winamp, you go into the preferences and tell it which device to use.
Desktop,
but
list,
what we want to know now...
Desktop, list, mobile, end of wait, please wait.
For our purposes, what is System Access going to do?
SA Mobile Desktop.
Email.
Let's,
SA Mobile Desktop Socializer.
Go into Socializer.
Contacts. SamNet Radio. Link.
SamNet Radio. Read only text. Land.
New window. Socializer. SamNet Radio. Link. SA Mobile Media Player.
And it is using the new sound card. So la-di-da. Now we have separate controls for our XP and Windows 7. Not necessary, but in my opinion, highly recommended, especially if you wish to do any serious audio work.
Socializer, SamNet Radio, Link, SA Mobile Desktop, SA Mobile Network, Desktop, List, Mobile.
And as you notice,
desktop, list, no tab, PDF, Skype, Ventrilo,
the speech is much more responsive. This is really one of those things you have to get into and play with, because your mileage may vary depending upon your hardware. For example, my laptop that only has 1 gig of RAM on a 1.6 gigahertz processor actually works, but trying to run Windows 7 on 512 and System Access on 512 meg of RAM makes your speech stutter, at least when you're really trying to do something. So maybe a dedicated card can improve that a little bit, but you really need to make sure that you have the resources to do this because you are really running two operating systems. Main thing I want to show you is the proper way to shut it down. If you hit the start key as you're used to doing in Windows,
start menu, NVDA,
you only have the log off option.
Menu closed, start button.
So the way to shut down the computer is to do it the same way you would in Windows 7. There are different ways, but my approach is to hit the start key and the letter M to go to the desktop.
Desktop, list, browser.
And press Alt F4. And you will get the shutdown or restart options just as you do under Windows 7. So when I press Alt F4,
shut down Windows. Ends your session and shuts down Windows so that you can safely turn off power. What do you want the computer to do? Drop down list, shut down.
I always recommend doing a shutdown. I mean, you can restart if you've installed something and want to test it. But if you are done, always shut down. Because if you go into a hibernate mode and there are any problems associated, those problems will come up and you could end up with a corrupted operating system. So always do this and press enter on the shutdown option.
If you shut down this remote computer, no one can use it until someone at the remote location manually restarts it. Do you want to continue shutting down? Yes button, Alt Y.
Now, by that message, it's saying that you can't get access to it until someone remotely restarts it, lets us know that the intended purpose for this was for remote access purposes. So we can use it, but that's what it was designed for. You are on the yes button by default.
No button, alt, yes button, alt, y.
And if you press enter,
desk.
Bye-bye Windows XP. But you've got it installed.
0%.
It's there anytime you
desktop,
need it.
List XP size 1.48 KB. Item
and
five,
the pop
bottom.
Means that the USB device has been disconnected, and the fact that the audio is slightly
USB
louder.
Virtualization stub driver. Device driver software installed successfully.
Lets you know that you are back in Windows 7. If you have any further questions, we'll try to help you. But really, if this is something you want to pursue, you need to sit down and maybe read some of the PDF files or do some research on Google. I'm sure there are many people playing around with it. And it's a nice addendum if you have the Pro or Ultimate versions. If you have the home version, you have to make a decision. Is this worth it to you? Or is it better to simply have XP on a dedicated computer? Maybe before you upgrade, instead of trading in, keeping your existing computer as a secondary machine, running a full-fledged copy of XP with everything installed on it the way you like. The other good thing, of course, is that if this thing gets corrupted, you could simply delete it and start over again. Or as you saw, you could have multiple machines. And I understand that these images can be backed up. If your copy of XP under 7 were to become corrupted, you could simply restore it to a previous date and time when all was good. Or devise a system to back up your Windows 7 and the copy of XP underneath simultaneously. So I hope this has given you a little bit of insight. It is impossible to cover all details. That's not what we wanted to do. But just to show you that it is there as an option, and a very cool option, because otherwise, if you had to go out and buy the VMware workstation for Windows, the cost on that is $179. So if you're scratching your head over the price, remember that now you have a much more economical, or at least a comparably economical option. And finally, we aren't showing you this because we want to sell you more licenses of system access, but please be aware that you will need either an additional license of system access, or as an owner of system access, you will every time have to go to www.sa2go.com or www.freescreenreader.com to launch a copy of system access. So if you have the means and plan to spend any time underneath Windows XP, why not buy a license for that purpose and you're ready to rock. Any time of the day or night. You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.